A few weeks after the fall of Saddam and the occupation of Iraq, I saw the news of Mariam's arrest in Paris on the canteen's notice board. Many of the guys had gathered, reading the same article. We were all shocked. Our first thought was, who exactly was this Mariam, written in the article that read, "We call for the French government to provide security for Mariam, the leader of the resistance." Since we were under the impression that Mariam was in Iraq with us under the bombardment, that was actually what Massoud had told us. Unit commanders and higher-ranking officers were assembled and scolded as to why they were sitting idle while they were witnessing many of the members performing self-immolations in Europe and elsewhere in the protest. Although I was upset that Mariam had betrayed us and left us, my sense of loyalty was strong, and I volunteered to take part in self-immolation.
زنانی بودن که از بیمارستان می آمدن و بچه ها می رفتن.
There were women who would return from hospital and were said to have undergone an operation called the feminine operation.
افراد اول که شما بخاطر.
They would encourage women to undergo this surgery, saying that, for instance, you have kidney problems or that you have anemia. They'd remove their uterus and ovaries so they could no longer hope of having a family in the future.
We would take part in sessions in which everyone had to insult one another. Cursing. I remember the first time I took part in these sessions monitored by Paris Bakhshoi. We were told everyone should confess to the things they had done. Some people stood up and talked. People had to fabricate lies in the sessions so as not to suffer consequences later. One of the guys stood up and said, "I took part in a private talk," meaning that he had had a chat with someone about something about the issues of the organization. It was then that I felt for the first time that these ceremonies made me feel nothing. This was the first spark that later convinced me to escape. But at that time, I still liked Massoud. I could see the wrong and ridiculousness, but I would think that perhaps Massoud and Mariam don't know what's going on here.
I was forcibly taken to a 150-member meeting of the women of the Leadership Council. As I was resisting sitting on that chair, because I refused to sit on that chair, they pushed me down and pulled my hands down. There was a woman who kept pushing me down on the chair so that I would sit calmly and listen to the speeches.
درد گردنم شدید بود قبلشم گوشم پرده گوشم از سمت چپ پاره شده بود.
I had a really bad pain in my neck. Prior to that, my left eardrum had been torn. They hadn't taken me to an Iraqi specialist. I was taken to one of the ordinary GPs of the organization, and my simple ear infection turned into a torn eardrum. Then they did what they shouldn't have and carried out an ear irrigation. And that's when the infection entered my internal ear. Even their own doctors said that I should go to an Iraqi doctor, and they knew that my ear needed an operation. I had put a piece of cotton wool in my ear so that the screams and cheers of the people in the meeting wouldn't hurt me so much. There was one woman who was provoked by the higher-ups and who was actually one of the torturers by the name of Faize Mohabbat Kar. She pulled the cotton wool out of my ear and shouted in it, What kind of a sick person are you for resisting so much?
One of the members said, I don't want to talk. Masood Rajavi loudly shouted, Who the hell are you to decide? And some other words. This was the first time I was hearing such words from him. He shouted some curse words. The whole gathering was dead silent out of fear.
It had been years since we had had news of our families, for instance, our mothers and fathers. We weren't given news of them. They said that you should give a written guarantee that you would no longer rest in sleeping quarters and that you would no longer think about anything but Masood and Maryam. They said that your goals and dreams should be Masood and Maryam only and that your leader is Masood Rajavi. You should direct all your affections towards Maryam and Masood Rajavi. To win our hearts and to deceive the women, Masood Rajavi presented the women of the Leadership Council and the trial members of the council with a gold necklace with a pendant with his image carved into it. He said, Wear this to remember me all the time. You should have me in your hearts and you should give me your affection.
Just a few days after my back operation, I was ordered to take part in a campaign meeting. I told them that I'm still hospitalized, but that wasn't a good enough reason for them. I attended, but after a quarter of an hour, I fell sick and I was allowed to leave. This was the type of torture, the kind of which I haven't seen elsewhere. To force you to attend in a mental torture session while you are being physically tortured as well.
We, the women, were even afraid to go in front of the mirror in each other's presence. If one of them saw us looking in the mirror, they might even report us to the authorities, saying that she is seen in front of the mirror a lot. And why would they care about that? Well, because if we cared about our looks, it meant we cared about our future. And if we thought about our future, then that meant that we wanted to leave the organization someday.
We went there with a certain motivation. Our intentions were not bad per se. We were thinking that with their beautiful slogans, we were going to serve our country. And with the religious ideologies that we had, we were under the impression that we were walking along the same path and in the same direction as such historical heroes as Bagher Khan, Sattar Khan, Amir Kabir, and Mirza Kuchak Khan, and Dr. Mossadegh. Only the passage of time made it clear that the fight of Masood Rajavi was not for the freedom of the people, but rather for power. This is what Maryam herself confessed in one of the meetings. So it's not something I'm making up. Maryam said that it was Masood's right to become the leader of Iran and not Ayatollah Khomeini.
The Red Cross came to visit the camp. We were briefed and told that we were to tell the Red Cross reps that the Islamic Republic tortured our families. The person who was in charge of me by that time was familiar with my defiant nature. She came to me and she sympathized with my pains and ailments a little, but in fact she was keeping me under her watchful eye during the meeting.
According to the 4th Geneva Convention, we were considered protected citizens. When they wanted to announce this, They set up a general gathering, and there we got to see and mix with our other friends. We mentioned our escape plans. First, we wanted to escape 2 days after, but then decided to do it on the third day because we were worried they would keep us busy with meetings and gatherings of some sort. It was there that I made my final decision and said yes. We made plans to meet next to the podium, which was next to the driveway where Masoud and Maryam took position during the parades and speeches. The driveway would lead to where Americans were deployed in Ashraf since the occupation.
My commander called me into her room. I refused to go, saying that now in this critical situation when I was going to meet the Red Cross reps, they were calling me into a room. No way. I had noticed that they were frightened I would do or say something, so they decided to remove me from the situation. They couldn't take me away forcefully in front of the Red Cross reps.
We all got into a car and drove towards the Americans, all the while fearing that they might catch up to us. We reached the Americans and they took us in. I should also point out that the place the Americans had dedicated to those who had separated from the MKO was not a nice place. It was like a detention center. Prior to that, we had heard many horrible things about this place from Mujahideen, saying that this place is horrendous and that people get killed or raped in order to deter us. But we had got to the point that we could no longer take any more of their lies, and we knew that remaining there any longer was a sin.
Zohra Qaimi said, wrap up the session. As they wanted to finish the meeting, I raised my hand and said that I wanted to talk. I had made up my mind to leave the organization, and now was my best chance for me to talk with the Red Cross reps. By this time, the women of the Leadership Council started throwing around the chairs, and they caused such a chaos that none of us could say anything to the representatives of the Red Cross.
Three months prior to this, the Americans had already interviewed us. I had already told them that I wanted to leave the organization and Ashraf. By then, they all knew because so many had requested the same. They would ask, do you want to stay in Iraq or go to the U.S.? And they said that they would help us reach our desired country in a few months' time.
They caused chaos to distract the Red Cross representatives and then to take me away from the venue. But I moved towards them. One of the Red Cross members even stretched her hand out, trying to protect me, and I managed to reach her.
At that time, they had managed to make a pact with the Americans, threatening that if they took us away, it would be bad for both sides. Because the MKO was providing the Americans with needed intelligence, they claimed it would be bad for them because we would give their intelligence to the insurgents fighting against the Americans.
The Red Cross representative sat me down on a chair. I whispered to her, please take me out of here with you. They have tortured me and have taken me to many torture sessions. And now if you don't take me with you, I will have no chance. They have some sedative injections that they will apply to my neck. They will make me unconscious, and I'm sure they will then kill me.
When we thought we had finally been freed, we ended up in the custody of people who were being served by the MKO. However, we still preferred this to being involved with the Mujahideen.
با من صحبت کردن گفتن که تو نگران نباش.
They told me not to worry and that now that I had talked to them I was safe.
آزاری نمیرسونن با فردا.
And they told me they would return to talk to me more extensively the day after.
صحنه بودش که اینا گفته بودن جلسه تموم شده.
Because at that time the session had already come to a close.
گفته بود جلسه تموم شده.
I begged them to take me with them, but they said they couldn't do that.
In 2007, the Americans at last allowed us to leave there in groups of five. And finally, we were set free to go and live our lives in the outside world. It had been years that I wanted to walk on the streets of a city. When, after 22 years, I could walk for the first time on the open streets and on the pavements and asphalt of somewhere that was not a closure, I had a strange feeling. It was euphoric.
I had two doctor's appointments, one for my ear and one with an orthopedist. Although the doctor's offices were in an Iraqi neighborhood, the organization had the situation completely under their control. I told myself, Zahra, you either die here or you have to escape. You cannot return to Ashraf camp alive. I went to the kitchen and saw that the windows were closed, sealed in a way that they could not be opened in any manner.
توی لحظه متوجه شدم که اینها رفتار منو مشکوک تلقی کردن. اومدن گفتن که
They had become suspicious of my behavior. They asked me to join them and sit down on a chair. I did as I was told because I knew that escaping was out of the question. Then I was called in for my appointment. I took my ear file and entered the Iraqi doctor's office. My interpreter there was a woman who was among the women of the Leadership Council.
همین توی تو ذهنم داشتم نقشه می‌ریختم که چگونه از لحظات استفاده کنم.
All the while I was analyzing the situation in my mind to see how I could take advantage of the slightest opportunity if it presented itself. They wanted to make the situation seem normal, so they called out, "Let's go."
گفتن بیایم بریم تا من فقط همین ثانیه‌ها بودش.
But then, as they turned their back on me, all this happened in a matter of seconds. I opened the back door and ran out.
During the first days that I was out, I still had this feeling that I shouldn't be thinking about my life and finding love. I was now away from the cult, but was still thinking that I was not entitled to these things. Neither Maryam Rajavi nor any other power can ever hold some people in a closed environment. Masud Rajavi used to say this himself, and now we should remind him of it again. He used to say, "No power can keep people in chains forever." Well, we should tell him the same thing now. No matter what you do, People who want to will get out one day. One day the chains will break off and the doors will open up. I wish you would stop all your cruelties and corruption and deceit, at least against your own people, and let them come out and see the world for themselves, to finally realize that what you had inflicted upon them were lies.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be looking at a question that a lot of people ask. This question is about a certain historical event, you know, that might have occurred. And that question is this. According to some historical accounts, Imam Ali alayhi salam, in his time when he had officially became the caliph of the Islamic Empire, he appointed a non-Muslim by the name of Muawiyah over the city of Marv to collect taxes, from its inhabitants. Right. So the question, you know, that we could pose here is this: why would Imam Ali, with all of the Muslims available, with all of his, you know, pious Muslim commanders and friends and companions, why would he choose a non-Muslim to become the person to collect the taxes from these people? So in response to this question, we can say that the actual act of choosing this person as his representative to collect taxes, this is historically authentic and correct. This person, he came on behalf of the people of Marv, and, you know, he submitted to Imam Ali, and on behalf of the people, they also, and through his representation, these people also submitted to Imam Ali. And Imam Ali wrote a letter to the people of Marv saying that, you know, I have appointed this person as my representative. And, you know, he also affirmed that he was the tax collector of this place. Now, in certain historical accounts, it's also been mentioned that, you know, later on, you know, subsequently, the people of Marv, the actual words of the account is that they became kafir, they became disbelievers, right? So this is something that occurred later on, according to this historical account, not when Imam Ali appointed the person as the tax collector. But it's also possible to interpret, this account of their disbelief in another way, right? Because the word kafara, like they became kafir, or they became disbelievers, you know, is a very term used in a wide array of senses and meanings. It could even be interpreted to refer to the fact that they kind of went against Imam Ali. They disbelieved in him. They began opposing him, or some other, you know, in some other meaning. It doesn't necessarily mean that they became non-Muslim. But even if they did, even if this person from the very beginning he didn't become Muslim, right? He didn't submit in that sense. He just submitted to Imam Ali's government and came and made a peace treaty with him. There's nothing wrong with Imam Ali. In principle, there's nothing wrong with, you know, him appointing this person as a person to collect taxes over these people. As long as the person was trustworthy and, you know, the people believed in him and were obedient to this person, as it does appear to be so from the fact that they sent him to Imam Ali in the first place, you know, on their behalf. There's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing, contrary to the, you know, dictates and universal principles of Islam or the infallibility and consequently the fallibility of the Imam Ali alayhi salam. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at whether Imam Ali appointed a non-Muslim as one of his representatives. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. Over 20,000 people died in Western Europe's summer heat waves, according to a new study. This year's summer temperatures would have been virtually impossible without the climate crisis, according to scientists. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has more for us. More than 20,000 people died across Western Europe in this summer's heat waves, in temperatures that would have been virtually impossible without climate breakdown, according to new figures. Analysis of excess deaths, the difference between the number of deaths that happened and those expected based on historical trends, reveals the threats posed by climate change-induced global warming, according to scientists. During last summer's heat waves, temperatures exceeded 40 degrees Celsius, 104 degrees Fahrenheit in London, in areas of southwest France, temperatures reach 42 degrees Celsius. And in Seville and Cordoba in Spain, a new record was set as 44 degrees Celsius. Analysis from the World Weather Attribution Group of scientists found that such high temperatures would have been virtually impossible without the climate crisis. In England and Wales, 3,271 excess deaths were recorded between 1st of June and 7th of September this year, according to the Office for National Statistics, 6.2% higher than the five-year average. The new analysis does not estimate heat-related deaths specifically, but the number of deaths was higher on average for heat period days than non-heat period days. COVID-19 deaths were excluded from the new study. In France, there were 10,420 excess deaths reported during the summer months, according to data released by Santé Publique France, the government health agency in France. One in four of these deaths, or 2,816, happened during one of the three intense heat waves that hit the country. The excess deaths were 20% higher in regions where extreme temperature red alerts had been issued. In Spain, the state-backed Carlos III Health Institute estimates that there were 4,655 heat-attributable deaths between June and August of this year. The Robert Koch Institute in Germany, the German government health agency, estimates that 4,500 people died in Germany during the summer months, specifically due to extreme temperatures. Dr. Friederike Otto, a senior lecturer in climate science at the Grantham Institute for Climate Change and the Environment at Imperial College University of London, said, "Heat waves are one of the biggest threats posed by climate change. High temperatures are responsible for thousands of deaths across the world every year, many of which go underreported. Despite this overwhelming evidence, there is still little public awareness of the dangers that extreme temperatures present to human health. The summer of 2022 was the hottest summer on record, according to the European Union's Copernicus Climate Change Service." Dr. Eunice Lowe, a research fellow in climate change and health at the University of Bristol in England, said, "Heat waves are becoming more frequent and intense as the globe warms up, so we can expect more and hotter heat waves in the future." Scientists have linked many past heat waves to human-induced climate change. This means that observed heat waves have been made more likely to occur or more intense because of human emissions of greenhouse gases. Global heating is caused by the burning of fossil fuels, forest destruction, and other human activities. The International Energy Agency, the IEA, advised last year that no new gas, oil, or coal development could take place from this year onwards if the world was to limit global warming to just 1.5 degrees Celsius. Dr. Eunice Lowe, a research fellow in climate change at the University of Bristol, said, "There was also a need for society to adapt to extreme heat. We need to adapt to heat in the long term. This includes designing homes, schools and hospitals that have good ventilation and prevent overheating, increasing green space and parks in cities, and making heat warnings accessible to all." The Reuters news agency has also covered the same story and gives us more details. Summer heat waves in France, Germany, Spain and Britain led to more than 20,000 excess deaths, according to a report compiled from official figures, released on Thursday. Temperatures hit nearly 40 degrees Celsius or above from Paris to London in 2022. And climate scientists from the World Weather Attribution Group found that such high temperatures would have been virtually impossible without climate change. A heat wave in 2003 caused more than 70,000 excess deaths across Europe, largely in France, and led many countries to implement measures such as an early warning system, asking people to check on others and opening air-conditioned schools. This and related action plans may have eased some of the impact of heat waves in 2022. But the death toll was still higher than expected, according to Chloe Brimicombe, a heat wave researcher at the University of Graz in Austria. Dr. Chloe Brimicombe said, "I consider this the most impactful heat wave since 2003. Because authorities do not attribute most deaths directly to heat, statisticians use the excess formula to give an estimate, looking at how many more people died in a given period of time than would be expected compared with a historical baseline. Heat can kill by inducing heat stroke, which damages the brain, the kidneys, and other organs of the body. But it can also trigger other conditions such as a heart attack or breathing problems." The World Meteorological Organization, WMO, said this month that Europe had warmed more than twice as much as the rest of the world over the past three decades. While the Copernicus Climate Change Service said summer of 2022 was the hottest summer on record. France reported about half of the summer's excess deaths in Western Europe, with 10,420 fatalities in total in France. Excess deaths reached 3,271 in England and Wales during last summer, according to Britain's Office of National Statistics. Spain recorded 4,655 heat-attributable deaths between June and August of this year, while the German health agency reported 4,500 excess deaths.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we discuss your queries regarding the upbringing of your children. The answers are based upon the Noble Quran and the narrations of Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him and his purified progeny. Today in our studio, we have with us our guest speaker, Brother Miqdad. He's an Islamic researcher in the Hawza Ilmiya of Qom. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for accepting the invitation after a long, long, long time.
The pleasure is all mine, alhamdulillah.
Well, in our previous episodes with you, we discussed the positives and negatives or pros and cons of social media, how they affect teenagers and what we should be doing. Now, I wanted to ask you that there are a lot of parents who are okay with, like, leaving their children and teens with for like more than 2 hours on screen, whether they are games or animations, and that too unsupervised. How can we bring awareness to both the parents and these children about the dangers of this?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yes, so this is a very important question. And unfortunately, we see this very often, as you mentioned. Parents somehow are very lenient or perhaps out of lack of awareness of the dangers of video games and social medias. When I say dangers, inshallah, we'll talk about them in today's shows. And so it's important that we bring awareness to parents that leaving your children unsupervised. When we talk about children, we're talking about from the age of these days 2 to 3, all the way until their teens. To leave them unsupervised in front of the screen, even if it's games that are considered as children games, or perhaps you've kind of seen that there's no, adult content on it, then you perhaps feel that this is okay.
All right.
I want to show today that, inshallah, we need to really review how we deal with this and at least be aware of the challenges that we are facing when it comes to the screen as generally. And inshallah, we'll talk about the different types of screens and see that there is a concern that we need to have. This is the first step. See, before we start talking about, okay, what should we do about this, etc., I want to over here just kind of bring this concern, as you mentioned, because of parents who are very perhaps unaware or easygoing when it comes to their children watching TV playing games.
All right.
So I'd like to talk about five major challenges that can come about when we are faced with the screen.
And what are those?
So I'll mention one, and perhaps it'll take more than a few shows to discuss this. But we can go them and discuss them and give examples as well.
Sure.
This can be for parents. So if parents are listening and you're joining us on the show, then these are things that we can think about. At least be aware of these challenges that come when our children are in front of the screen. But it's also for youth and teenagers that are watching this show and are also very much into video games, very much into animations, very much into Netflix and whatnot. For you to be aware of the things that you are consuming, because really we are consuming this, what has been given to us and fed to us on TV or on the screen. And so this is important for both categories of listeners, inshallah.
True. Brother Miqdad, you said that it's important for parents as well as the children to listen and analyze what is being fed to them. Inshallah, we'll expand this after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio presents a priceless gift to parents. Do you have problem with your kids?
I have two boys. One is 5-year-old and the other one is 3.5. And they constantly fight and wrestle with each other, and it often gets to a dangerous stage.
My 18-month-old daughter has learned to eat by herself, and she just refuses that I feed her. But usually, all the food basically goes everywhere except her mouth. So how can we allow this strife to happen for the purpose of freedom?
Don't worry. We're here to help.
For a child, the purpose of the food is only to feed. It's also for him to learn. It's also for him to explore and fulfill the need of curiosity, fulfill the need of freedom.
Islamic upbringing. Contact us. EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm with Brother Miqdad, and we are talking about the effects of animation and screen and the knowledge that parents and children both should have. Yes, Brother Miqdad.
Before I mention the 5 points, just let me define. When we talk about screens over here, I want to kind of have a broad definition over here. We want to include video games.
All right.
We want to include animations. We want to include movies or cartoons, or basically the world of animation, the world of video games, that which we are seeing only, and that which we are actively engaging in as well. So whether it's video games or other types of games that we are engaged in. So this is what we're talking about, screen. So I'll give examples as we mentioned these 5 points, inshallah. So the first point that I like to highlight over here is that when we are in front of the screen, we have to understand that although we count this as entertainment, the producers count this as education. So we have this, and I think we mentioned this previously as well, that at the highest level of policy making, it's there, you can search it online as well. The policymakers of whether it's Disney or Pixar or video games count this and are very open about this, that this is part of our education of society, education of the youth. So they are trying to portray a worldview to you or portray a particular type of values or goals or principles or
beliefs
to you through these channels, whether it is through animations or through video games.
Yeah.
So this itself tells us, kind of opens a red light for us, and so a warning light saying, okay, hold on a second. If right now I'm just giving my child to a teacher who is going to then teach his children in a very amazing way as well, because perhaps one of the best ways to teach somebody is through subconsciously, through the world of imagination, such as movies and video games, and pass on values and virtues and life principles and life goals and then a whole world view about how to perceive the world, basically.
Yeah.
So this is how it happens. So this is really brings about an awareness. And obviously, these things are in the hands of people that are very often not believing in God, not believing in the faith that we have. They have no concept of a hereafter. This is a worldview that is purely humanistic, purely secular, a non-godly worldview. And therefore, what they're portraying out there is something that's completely opposite to perhaps what you want your children to grow believing in.
All right. Well, Brother McLeod said that parents have to be aware of the fact that whatever the kind of animation or fantasy or world kind of things are being shown to them, their children, they need to be aware of that because the thing that is being shown may carry its own worldview, may carry its own beliefs, may carry its own policies and ideas, and it may be feeding us that, and parents and children both need to be aware of that. We'll talk more on that with you after a short break. Dear listeners, don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to IRIV English Radio.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam said, "No father has granted a gift to his child better than good manners."
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. I'm with Brother McThought. This is Islamic Upbringing, and we're talking about the animation world and fantasy world and what are its impacts on children and how parents can help them. Yes, Brother McThought.
So just to illustrate on the point that we mentioned, take one particular type of worldview, and that is that girls should be free and should be free. Right, and the definition of freedom is to go against their culture, is to go against the belief that their parents have, is to go against their faith, to go against everything that has come down from their parents.
That is traditional.
That is traditional, and to explore the world. And to explore the world means basically to break all the rules.
All the stereotypes.
Right, so this always often goes against hijab, often goes against the very fact of belief that we have. And this ideology, you can see it in so many different ways in different. So just to give an example, Brave, for those who've watched the animation Brave, or Moana, for example, or Tangled. These are a couple of years old for the new generation, perhaps. But these are animations that you've seen have exactly the same message out there, basically, that you're a girl, mm-hmm. and to be able to be successful, to be able to be amazing, to be able to be, let's say, beautiful, to be able to be something great,
explore yourself,
you have to go against your parents, you have to go against your culture, against your beliefs,
against,
and you have to go and explore the world. Exactly. Break rules, basically. Explore the world. Get out of the house, basically.
Yeah.
That kind of one theme that is portrayed in so many of these animations. I've just given you three examples, but it comes out across in these animations and in video games as well. You see the same things as well. So just to give you one idea, one example of how worldview is portrayed through these animations. Another example that we could give is the example of this game that's right now is probably one of the most famous games in the West, at least, Minecraft. So for those who play Minecraft, I remember I was speaking to a young boy. He was maybe nine years old. And I had a long conversation with him about Minecraft. And literally I was asking him, okay, because you know when we used to play video games that have a goal, right? You have levels to pass and you have a bad guy to kill at the end or whatever it is basically. So I asked him, okay, what is the goal of Minecraft? So he gave me one goal that you have to build something, whatever. And I asked him, okay, what about after that? And then he said this. And then what about after that? And mm-hmm. then this carried on for literally for 10 minutes. We just kept on talking about what you have to do next. And it just went on. And you realize that basically Minecraft is a sandbox game. A sandbox game means that it is a game that doesn't have a particular goal. You have to
just taking you from one level to another level.
No, there's no levels. It's just a game that doesn't have a particular purpose. Rather, you have to make your own purpose. So you've got different things to do, different tools and different things that you can build with. Mm-hmm. And you have no rules and you have no defined goal that you have to go and kind of search or fulfill. But rather, you have to be creative in a way to build your own purpose. Now, this, in one aspect, you'd be, okay, this is great. This is exactly what children should be doing. Correct. But this is based on a worldview that it's called existentialism, if you want to search it up, teaching you that we don't have a purpose in our life and we don't have a goal in our life. We have to make our own goal in life, basically.
All right.
Whatever you are in this life is in your own hands, and you make your life whatever you want it to be. You make your success whatever you want it to be. If you want to be this and you define success as this mm-hmm. and your purpose as this, then well and good, this is what your choice is.
All right.
While this is completely different from what Islam says. Islam says that you've been created with a purpose, you have a fitra, you're supposed to reach a perfection, that's a defined perfection, that's an eternal absolute human perfection.
There's a goal,
there's
a goal,
there's a path basically. It's not just a blank check that we've been created with. But you see how this game kind of is built on a particular worldview that is portrayed in this type of
These type of animations and games. Thank you so much, brother, for being with us. Thank you so much for providing so much information. We'll talk, inshallah, more on that in another session. Thank you so much to our listeners. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. In case you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for us, please feel free to contact us at englishradio@irib.ir. You can also find us on social media platforms by just searching Call of Islam Radio. You can listen to this program again on our official website, that's www.parstoday.com. Until another session, fi amanullah, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.